This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. If you're just joining us, we're expecting Senator John Kerry to make his concession speech shortly from Boston's Faneuil Hall, where his supporters are gathering. Stay tuned for live coverage of that. With me here in Studio 3A is NPR's chief political correspondent, Mara Liasson. And Mara, just before the break, we were talking about the stakes for both sides in this election. I think both sides thought everything was at stake in this election.
Yeah, this was an Armageddon election to the partisans on both sides. I mean, they both felt that horrible things would happen if the other guy won. And I think the difference is for Democrats, of course, is they don't have a power center. They don't have the House or the Senate. And it'll be really interesting to see what happens to the party. I mean, does it implode or does it do what Republicans often do, which is just dust themselves off and say, hey, we actually did something really good this year. When you look back at what John Kerry accomplished, the party was united, raised tons of money, turned out its vote. It was very aggressive. And it did things that nobody thought Democrats could do. Now, you know, does it manage to build on that into something that can work in 4 years from now? Or does it fall, as Democrats often do, into a circular firing squad and decide that, you know, Kerry should have been more left or less left or something and battle each other that way? We don't know.
Mara Liasson, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
NPR's chief political correspondent, Mara Liasson, who's reporting on this election throughout, has been very helpful to us all. Now, joining us to talk more about where the Democratic Party goes from here is Paul Begala, former advisor to President Bill Clinton, the co-host of CNN's Crossfire. He's with us by phone from his home here in Washington. And I know it's been a long night. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Oh, I'm happy to do it.
And also with us is Thomas Frank. He is a contributing writer to Harper's and to The Nation. And thank you for being with us. He's joining us by phone also from Washington.
How you doing?
All right. Paul Begala, where do the Democrats go from here?
Well, I heard Mara, and I think they're going to do the latter. In other words, they're going to form a circular firing squad. The disappointment, the anger, really the rage, is palpable among Democrats. And you know what? They can't blame the Chief Justice. They can't blame Catherine Harris. They can't blame Ralph Nader. This is clearly a legitimate win. And to have a solid majority in a high turnout election is the ultimate legitimacy in American politics. Democrats are going to have to deal with it. I suspect what they're going to do, there will be the usual bloodletting. They'll blame John Kerry. They'll blame his aides. I think that gets Democrats nowhere. I think the better thing to do is to do what Republicans did after the pasting that Barry Goldwater took, which is stop, take a breath, and assess why is it that so many people in so many states don't want us. You know, we got almost half the country, but the other side has a little more than half. And the cleavages are so deep and clear that I think Democrats ought to be analyzing that.
Well, Thomas Frank, what did the Democrats do wrong? If you look at just the turnout, I guess, I'm guessing here, but I think John Kerry may have gotten more votes than any other Democratic presidential candidate in history.
Is that so? Yeah. I don't know. Look, I was really motivated. Everybody I know was really motivated. But what I was motivated by was the prospect of getting Bush out. And this is the problem. Bush pulled off this win by mobilizing his base in a spectacular manner. And the Democrats were not able to do, for all the effort and all the energy and all the money that they raised, were not able to do the same thing. Now, what Paul said was very interesting, that they have to sit back Democrats have to regroup and think about why they were beaten and why these culture war issues continue to haunt them. This is now, 36 years since the first culture war battle started being fought in the late 1960s. You've got Nixon started talking about middle America and the silent majority, and Spiro Agnew started talking about the liberal media, and that is still powerful. That's still powerful stuff. That movement is still going, and the Democrats have not figured out why it works and why it keeps beating them and what to do about it. And until they do, it's going to keep happening to them.
Paul Begala, some people say the Democrats lack ideological fervor, a uniting ideology. One of the things the Republicans you were talking about did after that thumping they took at the hands of Lyndon Baines Johnson in 1964 was, think about who they were.
Who they are and who they oppose and why. Tom's right that most of the energy in this election on the Democratic side of the aisle was in opposition to Bush. But I don't think Democrats did a very good job of explaining with precision to Americans why it is they so deeply dislike Bush. Is it because they perceive him to be somebody who misled the country? Is it because they believe he's too ardently conservative? Is it because they believe he's too inflexible? Whereas with the Republicans, they had a very clear theory of the case against Senator Kerry. He was weak, waffling, and weird. three W's. And Democrats need that sort of clarity on the negative side. They also clearly need it on the positive side. Every Republican in America, you pull them out of the polling place, they will tell you they voted because they believe in traditional moral values and limited government. And now in this case, of course, they also support the president's wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Democrats are a much more diffuse lot by their nature, but a bit of intellectual rigor wouldn't hurt them.
And, well, Thomas Frank, where do you think that rigor may come from?
Look, the Republicans have been very, very successful, and this is going to sound a little odd, but they have defined themselves as the party of dissent in this country. If you look at their convention compared to the Democratic convention, the Republicans were mad. They were angry. I mean, that speech by Zell Miller, you know, which was so shocking and so frightening to many. They're angry. They've got a beef with the world. They've got a beef with the culture that we live in. You watch the Democratic convention, it was complacent. It was almost smug. They didn't even attack the president, you know. They sounded like the party with the majority, and they're no such thing. They were out in all three branches, and now it's even worse. So what they have to do is exactly what Paul said: define who they're against. Now, once upon a time, this was very easy for Democrats. They were the party of the people against the party of money, the party of Wall Street, the party of big business. That was easy for them to say. Today, that is so fuzzy that doesn't come to anybody's mind anymore.
If you're joining us late, we're still awaiting Senator Kerry's arrival in Faneuil Hall, where he's expected to make his concession speech. We'll bring that to you live when he does start speaking. In the meantime, we're taking your calls with Thomas Frank, a contributing writer to Harper's and to The Nation, and with Paul Begala, co-host of CNN's Crossfire, a former advisor to President Bill Clinton. If you're a Republican supporter, the number to call is 800-344-3893. Democrats, 800-344-3864. Let's go to Michael on the Republican line from Charlotte, North Carolina.
How you doing this morning?
Very well, thanks.
Actually, this afternoon.
Yeah, well, we all lost track.
I tell you what, I think the Democrats are missing out on one thing. When you look at the voting that took place with regards to all of these amendments to the gay marriage amendments, there was an overwhelming majority. Even before last night, and every time that it was put to the polls, whether in Hawaii or Alaska, there was an overwhelming majority of folks that said, we do not want this. We stand for a much more traditional moral values in terms of husband and wife being man and woman. And even within black congregations throughout the country, on Sunday morning, there were sermons given over the last couple of weeks about we need to vote on what we believe our God would lead us to vote on. And it wasn't so much that Bush got a vote for who he is, but it was the fact that he stood on a position that the majority of the Americans want in this country, which is traditional moral values. So whether it had been Kerry or Bush, had they both been on the same page with regards to the gay marriage issue or even abortion rights or being against abortion, because I'm also pro-life. I'm a black male who is pro-life, who's also traditional family. And it's very difficult for me to try to adhere to what I think are social wrongs to those who live in the black community, but at the same time see all these things with regards to the gay marriage issue, pro-life issues being pushed to the side by the Democratic Party. I can't align myself with that, mainly because of those things. And I think the press, the polls have all missed out on that opportunity to capture the fact that America says we need to stand on traditional values, and we're going to vote for the person who stands with that. Regardless of how we feel for social issues, we need to stand on traditional values.
Michael, thanks very much for the call. Paul Begala, if the media and the polls missed it, they certainly aren't missing it anymore.
Michael gave voice powerfully to exactly what's going on, and that is the problem with the Democrats today, is that so many voters in those red states believe that Democrats are somehow out of step with family values. And until we have a way to engage, and I'm not saying that they should become, Democrats should become Republicans or become pro-life. They should be whatever it is that they honestly believe. But they need to learn how to engage and debate these issues. I mean, I traveled with Bill Clinton all through the South, all through the Midwest, all through states that went red yesterday, and saw him carry those states with pretty liberal views on those issues, but he didn't duck them. First off, he was conversant in Scripture himself, and he has deep respect for Protestant evangelicals. And second, because he said things like abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, rather than seeming to celebrate issues like abortion and gay rights. He tried to deal with them and then put them aside so then we could have a debate about the economic issues where he did have common ground with those middle-class voters.
Thomas Frank,
exactly,
go ahead.
In some ways, this is exactly the problem, is that, you know, that when Clinton, you know, sort of conceded on so many of those economic issues, that he actually wrote that a lot of that constituency off. You've got to fight. Look, the issue that the caller was and the caller was, you know, spoke his piece very well, and it was very persuasive, and he's exactly right. That's what's going on in this country, and that's why the Democrats are losing. But you got to remember something about those issues. The whole thing driving the gay marriage movement was this idea that that the Massachusetts Supreme Court was somehow threatening your way of life. It was another way of thinking about social class. It was the liberal elite versus the common people of the heartland. This is, you know, this Republicans keep coming back to this way of understanding the world, this fake populist way of understanding the world, this cultural populism, and they keep riding this to, you know, to victory in each election. The way you beat the fake populism is with the real deal. You talk about social class in this country. You say it's not about the liberal elite and about those judges and the, you know, and about Hollywood. It's about the Fortune 500 and it's about Wall Street. And you bring back the populism of Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman, and you fight the fake populism with the real deal. At least that's what do I know? I mean, I'm just a writer. But that's what I think needs to happen.
Paul, you were trying to get in.
I think Tom makes a good point. So far as it goes, and I'm very much consider myself in those economic populist issues with him, but I don't think you can simply tell someone like Michael, who is desperately threatened by the prospect of two gay people getting married, that you're not allowed to think about that. Values will trump economics, and I'm the guy, you know, with my partner who hung the sign in the war room that said it's economy, stupid. Values will trump economics. Democrats have to at least be in that game and give an honest and principled answer as to why it is that they support abortion rights, why it is they support gay rights, rather than ducking. They either get a switch, which some like Zell Miller have done on all those issues, or they've got to fight. But I don't think you can only ignore them and say, look at me, I'm for raising the minimum wage and cracking down on corrupt corporations, because voters on up and down the economic scale yesterday voted against their economic interest. All my fellow overpaid liberal blowhards, all cable television, all voted for Kerry. All the folks who shop at Walmart, even though Bush is hammering them on economic issues, in my eyes, they all voted for him. So I don't think it's only economics.
That's right. But the thing is that the differences aren't sharp enough. The differences between Kerry and Bush on economics were extremely minor. Yes, Bush is the spokesman for the conservative movement, which has done enormous harm to so many of these people out of, you know, in red state America. This is what I write about in my book, What's the Matter with Kansas? And there's no question about that. But at the same time, there is values to, I mean, it's not brushing off values to talk about economic issues. There are values there as well. And 50 years ago, our ancestors knew this, that was the main thing. It's like, who are you? Which side are you on? Are you one? Are you with the people, or are you with the powerful? And this is actually, Clinton did a very good job. One of the funny ways of looking at all the elections since the 60s is that the populist candidate, the more populist of the two candidates, always wins. The one that is better at talking a populist game. And this time around, it was clearly George W. Bush.
We are seeing Senator Kerry leaving his hotel where he was staying there in Boston. A rather long-faced Senator Kerry, as you might imagine. He's headed over towards Faneuil Hall to make his concession speech. When that begins, we'll bring it to you live. In the meantime, let's get another caller on the line with Paul Begala and Thomas Frank. Aaron is with us from Montpelier, Vermont.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, I'd actually just like to read a quote, if that's possible.
If it's short, go ahead.
It's relatively short, yeah. It says, naturally, the common people don't want war, but after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine the policies, and it is always a simple matter to drag people along. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to this bidding of their leaders. This is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism
and
for exposing the country to danger. It works the same in every country.
And that's, from Joseph Goebbels.
Yes. Hermann Göring at the...
Hermann Göring, excuse me.
Yep.
I mistook my Nazis.
No. This is pretty much how I feel about the current administration and just their deceitfulness into bringing us into a very fictitious war. And the administration has also exposed, CIA operatives. And we know that these are people that are in the administration and nothing is being done about this. And, my frustration comes from just the lack of everything in this administration and the lies and the deceit that they've been feeding us.
Well, the plame investigation does continue. But, Aaron, do you think that Senator Kerry painted a sharp enough distinction between himself and the president on the issue of the war in Iraq? Had he been more sharp, do you think that might have made a difference?
I believe if he could have been more sharp, I think he definitely wavered a little bit in his decisions.
Well, he voted to support the war.
He did vote to support the war, but also, I think during his campaign he had denounced that later. I don't really know what could have been done differently. I feel that there's, at this point I don't feel that Kerry should be conceding at all. I think he should stick it out and really see what the people have voted for.
Count every vote there in Ohio, fight every provisional ballot.
Yep, that's how I feel.
Okay, Aaron, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thank you very much.
And gentlemen, as we look ahead towards the future of the Democratic Party, I think earlier Mara Liasson was talking about, two candidates around whom people may coalesce, John Edwards, Hillary Clinton. But Aaron is perhaps representative of another wing of the Democratic Party, perhaps the Howard Dean element of the party, which provided a lot of energy and money this time around and certainly seemed to inspire the primaries when they did get going, Paul Begala.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't begin or end the list today. First off, I think one of the things we did learn from the Kerry lesson is that there is a reason that we haven't elected a senator to the White House in my lifetime, and I'm no longer a young man. And it's senators have long, complicated, and inconsistent voting records. That's the nature of being a senator. I mean, I remember, because I worked for Bill Clinton, running against Bob Dole, one of the best Senate majority leaders the country ever had. We destroyed him because he had this 20, 30-year record of voting on every side of every issue. So I think the party would do well to look beyond Washington for its leaders, to take a look at Democrats who are winning in the states that Tom writes about in his very fine book, and try to examine why it is that they are winning in places in the Midwest, in the South, and try to figure out what they're doing right. So I wouldn't think it's simply Governor Dean or Senator Clinton or Senator Edwards. I mean, I would look at Governor Vilsack in Iowa. I would look at Governor Sebelius in Kansas. Kathleen Sebelius, successful governor in a Midwestern, very Republican state. I think it went 7%.
Tom Frank, I want to give you the last 30 seconds.
What should I say?
Where you think the party is going to coalesce around and, that circular firing squad.
I don't know. Look, there has to be some accounting after something like this. I think there were some terrible strategic blunders made in this campaign. Look, I've got in front of me an article that I wrote. Well, I'll just tell you the story. I was out in San Francisco. I picked up a city magazine out there in San Francisco, and it had an article about these society women there who were very energized for Kerry. And, of course, you always like to see people energized for your team. But the kind of things they were doing, they were
quickly,
trying to...
Tom.
Sorry?
Quickly, please.
They're trying to persuade other society women to not buy expensive shoes and give the money to Kerry instead. And it's like, with friends like that, you can't help but lose.
Tom Frank's book is What's the Matter with Kansas? Paul Begala is the co-host of Crossfire on CNN. Thanks to you both. More after a break. This is special coverage from NPR News.